from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
I'm still giggling about the Cowboy fan. There's nothing quite like a good your mother retort. Catches him flat-footed every time.
Sometimes people go to like the triple dog dare too fast, though. See, Raj.
Wow.
I remember texting out just a fairly, you know, just blame it on See, Raj or something like that. And all of a sudden my mother was involved. It's like, whoa, we jumped up a notch there. It's sort of a breach of etiquette. You know, you go from the dog dare to the double dog dare. He went right to the triple dog dare.
As Herm Edwards has reminded us time and time again, you play to win the game, Wyman.
You play to win.
He reached too far too fast. The 5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The top four scoring teams in the NFL during this regular season are the final four teams left in these playoffs. And only one of them, I believe it's just the New England Patriots, ranked in the top 10 in scoring defense. And it's led to conclusions that perhaps we are, in fact, in a new era of the NFL. And everybody that's out there chasing around the next hot young offensive coordinator who may or may not have ever had a cup of coffee with Sean McVay to be their head coach are in fact on the right track, because there is never going to be, I'll say this personally, I was looking forward to seeing a couple of these offenses get wrecked over the weekend. It's one of my favorite things about the playoffs, and it goes back to the 1980s. Like, I really liked it when the Houston Oilers would get into the playoffs and get hammered. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, all the tricky stuff, all of that, like there's no substitute for playing really good defense. And then this weekend started, and you saw three offenses that really just decimated the opponent, because the Chiefs, the Rams, and the Patriots, that was weapons-grade offense that just eviscerated their opponent.
I'll tell you what, though, New Orleans, that's got to be a bit of a disappointment. I mean, there's some defense that was played there, because New Orleans has, what, they were 151. I think they had the best. Maybe it was the Rams as far as point differential goes. But yeah, there was a little bit of defense. I talked to a higher-up Seahawk person today, and we were talking about the penalties and some of the stuff that's going on. And don't you think, I mean, and we talked about it earlier, that a lot of it has to do with the penalties as far as the offense is succeeding. And his comment was, look, the NFL loves scoring. And they want to see that. And that, I think sometimes that just sounds like something that somebody says, like, you know, when they're complaining about officiating. But really, I mean, there's very little you can do on defense. And most of the calls, there was a really bad call on Max Unger last night.
Yeah, it was awful.
Yeah,
I got really mad.
That was not holding.
He just fell on top. He pushed him down, right?
Yeah. And well, luckily, you know,
push him to the floor.
Yeah, throw him to the floor. Anyway, it's nice that didn't, you know, end up affecting the game or anything like that. But I think you do have to take into account that there is a lot of that is helping these offenses along, even against really good defenses. Who's the number one defense yardage-wise? Wasn't it Baltimore this year?
Chicago.
Chicago was up there. But, yeah, I mean, I don't like the way it's going. I think it's gonna reach a peak. But, you know, you have to say this. Offenses get ahead of defenses, and then the defense usually catches up, just in general. And so this year, which is so funny about football, because like Mike Leach was telling us, well, how'd you like this game? That was the air raid. This was an element of the air raid. This was a, you know, and I've said this a million times, but where the go-to twins go to school, Liberty High School, am I right?
Issaquah.
Oh, they go to Issaquah?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's
well,
right.
At Liberty High School, they used to run the fly sweep all the time. That's all they ran. You know, and
shout out to Steve Valick.
He's
a great coach.
That's what I hear. I hear he's a really good
guy too.
Yeah. So, but yeah, they run that concept down there for years. I mean, 2006, when I was the defensive coordinator at Interlake, that's what they were running. And, you know, and that's something that you see teams are starting to catch up with that. But now, you know, you get these offensive coaches in there, and it's, you know, they just start grinding away on all these different little. You see the one where they go fly sweep. Tyreek Hill does this with Kansas City, fly sweep motion, and then he circles around back behind the quarterback. And then sometimes they'll throw a screen to him off of that. But I feel like when I'm watching the fly sweep now, just the basic fly sweep doesn't work so much now, because at the end of the season, you know, defenses start to catch up. And that's what I'm saying, that defenses are starting to, you know, you're not seeing those things go out the gate, but all the stuff off of it, and then, you know, how it splits a defense apart, it's, you know, it's pretty remarkable. But, you know, defenses will catch up to that. I just feel like with the rules and, you know, maybe some of this new stuff coming in, that might be the explanation for it.
What, again, were the specific rule changes this year that changed things so drastically? Or is it just a matter of more offensive coaches and more creativity on that side of the ball?
I think it's the points of emphasis about about we're going to call more illegal contact. We're going to call more pass interference.
Because it's the same penalties. It's just that they're saying this year we're going to focus on this.
And they did have the roughing the passer penalty early in the year. I felt like that they've eased off. And the helmet, lowering the helmet for contact, which I think everybody was really worried about, they pretty much haven't called that.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, that's the when they've invoked that, and I think the times that you've seen it called, it's been pretty egregious. That's not been something that's implemented.
Have you reached a point, or am I alone with this, that I don't really know what pass interference is anymore? I honestly, and you know, for years and years just watching the game, you had a pretty good idea what pass interference was. But now when I watch games, you know, and even when the commentator says, well, yeah, you can see that he did, I'm going, well, yeah, I guess. You know, well, I get lost on what it is anymore.
Well, it's a total judgment call, right? I mean, whether or not that affects, I saw a pretty similar play to, and I can't remember the game it was in, but to KJ Wright and the sort of hooking of the hip there when he batted that ball down and got called for PI, which I thought their legs got tangled up. I thought that's what really, you know, made that happen. But you're starting to see more.
Well, they
and more
also said, sorry, Dave, they also said they could have called pass interference on KJ when he got the interception.
Yeah.
People
exactly.
Pointed
he
to
was
that.
There. Yeah. And which, and you know, was it Pereira that was on? Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm in the elevator. He actually, you know, said, look, that was a bang bang play. You look at it slow motion and you can't do that. You got to, you know, make the judgment on the field. But some of the stuff like the hands to the face thing, I think is ridiculous. If they try to say that that's safety, and I'm still down on the whole horse collar tackle. I'm sorry, there are not that many times that you see somebody really get hurt from that. And I think that one is a mistake. But, you know, what you're starting to see is that the point of emphasis, like you said, Danny, that now all of a sudden, New Orleans game, here's another one. The quarterback stuff, to me, is crazy. Like, you can't come anywhere near his helmet. If your finger grazes his face mask, Marcus Davenport last night had a great rush, and he kind of dove out and put his hands, and it happened to just barely touch Nick Foles' neck, and they called him for that. That kind of stuff, they need to let that
stuff
go.
Hit him in his larynx, Dave. You, more than anyone, should know how sensitive a quarterback's larynx is.
Yeah. No, I mean, it shouldn't be that way. It really shouldn't. They need to de-emphasize that point.
Let me ask this, and let's move away from how they should call it to how they are calling it. If we're seeing a time where the top four scoring teams are the last four standing, and if you go back since the Seahawks' last Super Bowl appearance, so that would be 2014, there's only been one time that a team has made the Super Bowl without being a top 10 scoring offense. Yet there's a number of times where you've seen teams reach to this point or even to the Super Bowl without being a top 10 scoring defense. Should the Seahawks modify the way that they're building their team? Should it change the way they're doing it? If that's the direction of the league, because your dad has the saying, you're fighting the forces. You're trying to play how you've always played, and the game's changing. Should the Seahawks be trying to adapt to the way that the game is being called now?
Well, I would say not after 1 year. I mean, this could be an anomaly. It could be that next year all the top 10 defenses are in there. I mean, look at, you know, these teams all run the ball really well. The Rams are number 3, Pats number 5, Saints number 6. You know, so that is staying true. But, I think that you would be panicking if you all of a sudden decided to entirely. But I think it's smart to keep your eye on it and keep your pulse on that. Like, maybe you want to spend all of your money on quarterbacks and big, fast receivers.
Yeah, it's funny that, because I came away from the weekend feeling that I don't want the Seahawks to go out and, hey, give me one of these guys that brings me some new offense. Because I feel like that's what everybody's doing. And if you're trying to do that right now, you're playing from behind already. If you're trying to catch up to the Rams, what are the odds that you're going to find somebody that's going to be able to do what Sean McVay does better than Sean McVay? Like, you can't try to emulate what other people are doing. You have to kind of forge your own way.
Yeah.
I think trying to copy and trying to take from that, I came away from feeling that, like, man, Seattle needs to get some better defensive players. That they need to ramp up on defense rather than who are we going to get to keep up with the pace of these offenses.
Well, and that's why I've said pass rush, because almost every quarterback that you see, I guess the one exception from what I saw this year is, well, you'd probably say Brady. Brady and Patrick Mahomes seem to not be as affected by pass rush. But Jared Goff, he might be the worst. As far as when you get around him and start pressuring him, his throws are terrible. And so, you know, that would probably be it. And, you know, Brock said as much this morning on Brock and Salk. He said about trying to emulate Sean McVay and how they've done that, like, hundreds of thousands of times, and that you're always going to be kind of a second to them if you try to do what they do. You go, and the way you put it, Danny, I think is forge your own way. And I think Pete Carroll is still going to sit there and believe in defense and the running game. And you know what? It wasn't that long ago that the best defense in the league just entirely obliterated what was maybe the best offense. I think it was the second best offense in league history, and that was the 43-8 win in the Super Bowl.
It's not like the Seahawks have a bad offense. I think if you go back and look at it, I've heard these guys run it out. They average 30 points a game their last half of the season. So that's good enough to get it done. And the thing is, and I'm looking at these DVOA stats here, there's not a top 10 team left defensively. The Saints are the best team left in the playoffs right now at number 11. The Patriots are 16th, Rams 19th. And Kansas City 26. And then you flip it around on the other side, Kansas City number one in offense, Rams number two, Saints number four, and the Patriots number five. If Kansas City goes all the way this year, though, I think that's going to definitely change some things. Because it was kind of funny, you know, because I just always watch it from a gambling perspective and knowing the point spreads and everything. And some of the things that happened this weekend just defied any kind of logic whatsoever. That whole Kansas City defense, you heard about them all year going, man, Kansas City, one of the worst, the Chiefs. And what a great offense with Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, all this stuff going on there. And even with Damian Williams, they still have a good running game with their third-string running back. And yet this defense has been god-awful for most of the year. If they end up winning the Super Bowl, then I do think you have to rethink things a little bit, because that's going to be proof that you can win a Super Bowl with having a half-baked defense out there.
Yeah, I will say that it at least gave me pause for a second of, like, am I going to have to recalibrate my entire worldview of football, which is that having a great passing offense is the best way to win 10 to 14 games each season, but you're not going to win with that same consistency in the playoffs. That the best teams that win in the playoffs are teams that run the ball, have a strong running game, and play a ton of defense. We'll see. Did you guys see the penalty against Denico Autry? And I bring this up because we talked about Michael Bennett a second. He's the Colts defensive lineman.
Oh, my God. I forgot to complain about this one.
He gets a sack, and he gets – I don't know if you can complain about it.
Oh, when he did the thing in front of the official?
Are you telling me Michael Bennett doesn't do that sack dance?
They told him he had to stop, though, that you can't do the swivel into the hips.
Well, he did it right in front of the official, though.
Was that a new rule this year?
I think they started it last year where they're like, we're not going to have any more of the lewd thing. I thought after he got flagged and he complained about that, he was going to say it was only two pumps.
That's right.
Instead of McKringleberry, because McKringleberry, it's the third pump that gets you in trouble. He's like, I only gave two. But he also did it straight to the official.
Would you guys say that I'm a prude?
No.
Okay. That grosses me out. That little gyration there that they do, you know? Did you ever see that? Did you ever see Madea's family reunion where the old ladies complaining about the young people dancing, out there gyrating all over the place? It was just, it's kind of gross. But I'd be like,
well, right in front of the official, though.
So what? Who cares where the official is? That was a total judgment by him. He looked like, oh, now that's disgusting. I'm going to throw a flag. To me, since when can you not celebrate? I mean, are we really doing the three pumps McKringleberry thing? Honestly.
I think there's a little bit of that. I think they don't want you swinging your hips.
I can't remember what game it was, but I do remember Danny counting out loud in the press box the number of pumps from Michael Bennett in his little sack dance.
Wait, I was loud in the press box?
Yeah, that's a shocker. I can hear you from the broadcast booth.
I found something amusing that was in there. The other thing that we saw over the weekend is the importance of being a top two seed. of getting the first round bye. And when the playoffs started, I remember when we had Trey Wingo on, and my belief was this is the most wide open the playoffs have been in a number of years, that I feel like the 6 seed has as much chance as the 2 seed of getting in there. And what are we left with? We're left with chalk. Each team that got a first round bye has advanced to the conference championship game. And then I went and looked, and basically since, and I think this is a fair dividing line, beginning in 2012, which is the start of the Wilsonian era.
It's after Bobby and Russell.
After Bobby and Russell.
ABR.
ABR. Since the dawn of ABR, that you've looked, there have been 14, of the 14 teams that have made it to the Super Bowl, 8 of them have been first or second seeds. 8 of them have essentially had a first round bye. That you had it, like, that's, you're starting to see there are more and more teams. It is much more rare to see a team that's able to do it. It's a huge advantage to have that bye.
What about the Patriots, though? 8 straight conference appearances. I mean, that's gotten boring. But you know what? You can't say that these aren't going to be great games. I mean, this is going to be, I can't wait to see how Belichick and his ghost of a defensive coordinator, whatever that guy does.
Brian Flores.
Yeah, how they defend Kansas City. And, you know, and then, you know, you look on the other side just to see what's going to happen between the Saints and the Rams. You know, the Rams had the one where they ran out of gas. And really, this was, what, 30 points that they scored against the Cowboys. Not a ton of points, I guess. But, you know, it seems like the Saints can be more easily shut down than the Rams. And the way the Ram defense played, you know, holding Ezekiel Elliott to only 50 yards, that was pretty impressive. And I feel like they've got so much talent on that defense that, that, you know, if those guys decide to play together and really play well, they do have that, the talent there. You know, the two linebackers there, Abukam and Middleton, kid from UW, I mean, they're starting to play really well too. So anyway, I guess my point is that, you know, as much as I hated seeing the chalk, I really wanted to see some upsets there. I thought it would have been really cool for the Colts to go and play at the Chargers. And, you know, that would have been fun to watch. But, you know, look, this is these are good matchups. This is going to be fun football this weekend.
Yeah, well, usually in March Madness, we like the Cinderella stories. But when it comes down to a 1 facing a 2, it can be a really good game. And I was just thinking, though, and I was with you, Danny, because I was thinking, boy, if you're a 5 or 6 seed, especially in the NFC this year, that you're going to have a chance to maybe be, and going back and seeing how many wild card teams have made it to the Super Bowl and had actually won the Lombardi Trophy and as recently as the Packers in 2010. But I was thinking about it this morning, well, 2010 was the last time that this happened. We're almost a decade beyond that now. And so, yeah, it stressed even more the importance for the Seahawks to somehow win the division and make up that 3-game difference that you have with the Rams this year, because, boy, going 3 games on the road, Clayton talks about it all the time. I thought maybe this would be the year that a team could do it, but, boy, you really, to get that. And then the bye week is just, you got the bye week built in there where you get 2 weeks to prepare and to rest and get guys healthy, and then you're playing at home with your crowd there against, and you've got a superior record to the team you're facing anyway, and they're on the road. So all these different things added up to what we saw this weekend.
I want someone to remind me of this next year.
Well, yeah,
like
me too.
When we get to this point, I want it, when I start talking myself into all these different things that'll happen in the divisional playoffs, I want someone to say, hey, knucklehead, hey, you know what happens always? The top 2 seeds almost always win.
Yeah, hey, knucklehead, the Colts were a 6 seed coming in, even though they won 9 of 10 to get to the playoffs or whatever it was.
You already reminded yourself of, let's not get all caught up in the fancy offenses.
That's true.
Yeah.
But
so,
see, then I went out and watched what happened this weekend, and all the fancy offenses went and, like, rained death and destruction down upon everybody they played.
I think it'll be interesting to see how people react. I almost want it to go and be a rematch of that Monday night game, and it's like 54-51, just to see how people will overreact.
And start freaking out.
And start going, oh, my gosh, you can't even spend any money on defense. You got to go get receivers and a quarterback and running backs and all that stuff. That'll be fun to watch.
I'll say this. If you're going to argue for the best thing for the Seahawks to have happen, it's probably that. It's for everyone to decide that you need to score 50 right. points a game, because that means that people are going to stop looking for the kind of players that Seattle will want for how they play.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about the Saints play some old-fashioned offense. They use a fullback. Like, they use a fullback more than the Seahawks use a fullback.
How about that kid Hill?
Taysom Hill. That's really fun to watch.
What about the pass that he threw to Kamara? I mean, I think they had a penalty that brought it back, but I was like, my gosh, is he the second string quarterback or is he like a...
He was their emergency quarterback last year. Is he their backup now?
Teddy Bridgewater's
the backup. Oh,
that's right. Teddy Bridgewater. Do you see they have a guy? I was like, they have Bridgewater. They have a guy on their team named Banjo.
Oh, really?
You ever heard of that last name before?
No.
Yeah, that was very strange.
Yeah.
It's very inconsequential, as it turns out, in our discussion.
Pretty funny if you'd ask the coach, hey, coach, are you going to play banjo?
We used to have a call on the...
No, I was thinking more guitar.
Yeah. We used to have a call, banjo. That was an inside-out, man-to-man call. Banjo. It was like a combo thing. But anyway, yeah, so that guy's fun to watch. So you're right. Alvin Kamara, I think, is fantastic, the routes he runs and everything. So they're going to be good games. You know, we all wanted we didn't want the chalk to finish, but you're right. It probably would be the best thing if everybody, you know, they went to this 54-51 type of result in the Super Bowl and everybody, you know, freaks out and panics and Pete just sits back and John and go, you know what, we're still going to stick with tried and true what's worked for forever. Because, you know, if you can – some of these guys, part of it is because – I think Patrick Mahomes might be like a once-in-a-lifetime type of quarterback. That the throws that he makes on the run, it's amazing. And, you know, I wrote down in my notes, like, I've never seen the way Andy Reid, the way that they test zones is pretty fantastic.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because if you're a zone dropper and, you know, you have to, like, honor a certain guy that, you know, if a guy comes into your they ran a combination on this Darius Leonard kid where he drops back to his hook area, you know, which is about the size of this room, you know, 12 by 12 or so. And, you know, there's guys that come in. And so one time the tight end comes inside and then he darts back out and they throw him the ball. So then they do that again and then they drag a receiver behind him. And it's just you see it on almost every combination of plays where it's like time and time again, they're like, okay, you're going to jump that one. Well, then I'm going to throw it here. And if you jump that one, I'm going to throw it here. And I think Mahomes is so accurate and so good. He never seems to not have an alleyway to throw in. And just his ability to throw all of those ridiculous passes back across his body when he takes off. I mean, I think he might be a once-in-a-lifetime player. Jared Goff does not come off like that to me at all. To me, and I don't want to sit here and call him a system quarterback because he throws a great deep ball. He really does. But, you know, I don't think that there's anything revolutionary there, but I think there is with Patrick Mahomes.
It's Danny David Moore coming up next. Kickers are like cats. They're not to be trusted. That was emphasized this weekend. We'll tell you what it means next.
This is Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
This is our Danny David Moore. It's brought to you by Ornitos Premium Tequila. There was at no point in Saturday night's Rams-Cowboys game that I felt like, man, the Seahawks would be doing so much better against the Rams in this game, which is weird because Seattle was really competitive with them. They were really competitive. They had a shot, went down to the wire in both games. One game, it was a 4th-and-1 sneak by the Rams that allowed them to run out the clock. The other, they were 25, 30 yards away from what could have been a game-winning touchdown.
Did they face C.J. Anderson?
They did not.
I didn't think so.
No.
Do you think C.J. Anderson tipped the scales?
So to speak.
Isn't it weird to watch him run and like realize he's been let go by two teams this year?
It's fascinating to me how sometimes a guy will just all of a sudden flourish somewhere, you know, whether it's the offense makes sense to him or the way the line blocks just looks. I mean, he looked like he's been doing that his whole career.
How joyful. He just looks happy. He looks like he's having a good time playing.
Yeah, because fat people are jolly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be there.
How about dieting people? Are they jolly?
No. No, not always. Sometimes we're fine. Yeah. Well, the reward is, you know, feeling better.
Not always.
10 years younger sometimes.
Not always. Sometimes you just feel grouchy.
You say sometimes that you get bored, right?
Yes, all the time. I don't drink and now I don't eat sugar. It's awful. It's no fun.
Yeah, but you've not lost your jolliness, Danny.
No, that's not true. I'm actually a much more miserable person these days.
No sugar at all.
Well, no, I eat some sugar, but generally, so to speak, I don't eat the amount of nerds I used to, I'll tell you that. Sometimes I just sit there and go, ah! Well, not doing that anymore.
That's because you're a grown up. Okay.
Don't you be going hating on nerds. Willy Wonka, that's some good stuff there.
That stuff is just, you might as well just get a teaspoon of sugar, pour it down your gullet.
Yeah, that's fine too.
Okay.
The one thing that happened this weekend, and I'm at a loss for what the Seahawks should do going forward. If you can't count on Adam Vinatieri, if you can't count on the gold standard, that's like finding out the entire dollar system is about to go kaput. If you're looking for a kicker, and the Seahawks are going to be on their fourth kicker in four seasons this year, and you realize that something like this happens.
The age of 46. Oh, and he hits the upright. Wow, down the field they go, trying to cut it to a two-possession lead. And, folks, we have seen this before.
Dave, what do you do? Like, no kicker
don't ask
can be,
me.
No kicker can be trusted.
No, they can't. It's just so weird just because, you know, again, Hauschka, and you'll have to fill in the blanks because I'll be honest with you, I really don't pay attention to kickers.
You're probably a better person for it.
So Hauschka misses all those down in Arizona. We end up with a tie that year. That was what?
He had a
2015?
Tough year. 2000.
Or was it 16?
That was 2016.
16, right. And so that year they end up cutting him because it went south. But before that, he had not been a problem.
And they didn't cut him. They just didn't resign him.
They didn't resign him.
He was going to be a free agent, and he was going to be looking for a raise. And honestly, he ended up getting the raise from Buffalo.
Right. And
for,
he goes
for
to
what,
Buffalo.
$3 or $4 million a year?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were paying him two here. So he goes to Buffalo and what? As a Pro Bowler?
Yes.
The next year. I mean, so, and he admittedly was on the decline. I mean, there was some bad kicks that year.
It kept coming out low. Pete would even talk about it.
Yeah.
The ball kept coming out low. And you looked at his performance, and it's not like I said, I don't want him to come back. But I was like, you're not going to pay him more money to kick here.
Yeah.
And honestly, I assumed that Buffalo did pay him more because it's hard to get a kicker there.
Right.
Nobody
it's not great ideal situation.
Nobody wants to go up and kick up there. So
right.
You've got to pay a premium to get it. And they looked at it and like, hey, this is as good as it's going to get. I was fully on board with them. And then Blair Walsh is two kickers that struggled the year before. That's what it was. In Minnesota, Blair Walsh had less wiggle room because he'd missed the kick in the playoffs against the Seahawks. Mm-hmm. I was all for giving him a shot. I thought that was Seattle was going to save about $2 million and get a kicker that was coming back from a bad season.
Really? I mean, because you're the curdled milk guy.
This was the curdled milk theory came after Blair Walsh.
Oh, okay.
Blair Walsh is responsible.
See, I think you're psychologically damaged beyond repair when you miss like Walsh did. We interviewed him. I really liked him. A nice kid. But I felt like something like that was going to haunt him forever.
Okay, that's a fair point. Why in the world do you want Cody Parkey here then?
Because if you're Cody Parkey and you've hit the upright six times,
he's due chance, to not hit it.
Yes, yes. Now you could say that it might mean that he'll just miss it altogether and be wide left or wide right.
Or you might say he's cursed if you believed in such things as being ruined forever. That he's just destined to keep hitting the upright.
There's a difference between hitting the upright and flat out missing because you're closer to making it when you hit the upright. Like in horseshoes, it's like a leaner.
But mostly, you don't want him because he's a jackass and he goes on the Today Show. He goes on the Today Show and yucks it up about his missed field goal.
As a kicker, you know, you live for those moments. And I was, like you said, I was 3 for 3 before that. I had a lot of confidence going into that kick. So I went out there and my long snapper and holder did a great job, and you know, I saw the wind moving a little bit. I said, all right, this is where I'm going to play it. And obviously, I didn't know it was tipped or anything. I just went down, and I thought I hit a pretty good kick. You know, felt good off my foot, and then looking up, and then I saw it hit the upright, and then hit the crossbar, and I'm like, surely it'll go in. unfortunately, bounced towards me, but obviously, I'm disappointed. That I let the fans, my teammates, and the whole organization down, but I'll continue to keep my head held high because football is what I do. It's not who I am.
It's not funny, Cody.
He wasn't laughing.
It's not funny.
He wasn't laughing. It was Hoda and the other woman.
Okay, but he told it in a fashion so that they felt like, oh, this is where we laugh. Yeah, I just knocked us out of the playoffs.
He needed to come in. Like, they needed to put more pancake makeup on him, right? He needed to appear white as a ghost if he was going to do this.
Well, look, I'm not saying he should have gone on there and acted all bummed out, but he should be bummed out. I mean, like, it's less than a week later. When was this today's show.
That was taped, I think it was the end of last week.
Really?
Yeah.
My God.
So it was less than a week after he had missed the kick.
I can see why Nagy was not happy with him at all.
Here is Matt Nagy, the Bears coach, when asked about that appearance today.
We always talk about a we and not a me thing. And we always talk as a team. We win as a team. We lose as a team. And, you know, I didn't necessarily think that that was too much of a we thing.
Here's why.
That's lame.
Why do you think it's lame? Because I think I understand what he's saying now.
Come on. This guy just went on this show. It wasn't like, hey, it's going to be about me. He felt bad about missing the kick. And I think, and I said it earlier, I just, you know, when people, when they fail and they're accountable and they're, he's a stand-up guy in my book, and he went on national TV.
I would agree with that. Here's
And he wasn't laughing. It was the women that were the hosts there that were laughing, Savannah Guthrie or whoever that
was. Yeah, but if he had been, like, really bummed out about it and, you know, like, maybe, and I'm not saying he should act or anything, but maybe he's, like, close to tears or whatever, would they all be laughing? Why did they laugh there?
Probably because of the format of the show, and that's what they usually do in those, and that nobody, they don't bring people on to have an interview where everybody's really bummed out by it.
And, you know, sometimes when we interview Seahawk players or something, even when they're talking, it's not all that funny. Sometimes it's like an awkward laughter that we have.
You think we give them courtesy laughs?
Yeah, well, maybe occasionally. I don't know. Well, I'm just... Forget about that, but I'm just looking at Parkey's contract right now. The Bears thought enough of him to give him a four-year, $15 million contract before this season, $9 million guaranteed. The kid's only 25 years old, so what I'm getting at is, you know, Matt Nagy thinking it's lame with the we and me crap. Well, let's get him here in Seattle. Let's get him here in Seattle, have a kicking competition with Kickin' Fickin', and let's see what you might have there, because if they thought enough of him to give him that much money, he can't be as bad as he was this year. Only being 25 years old, if it did work out here, he could be your kicker for the next 10 years.
There was somebody that looked a lot like you earlier, just really like 5 minutes ago, who said that when you miss that bad, you never get over it with Blair Walsh.
Well, Blair Walsh, that was in, well, I guess Parkey's was in the playoffs too, wasn't it? Okay, but wait a minute. There's a little kicker here. You need to put an asterisk by Parkey because that ball was tipped. And the NFL came out and said, hey, that wasn't a missed field goal. It was actually tipped by one of the Eagles.
All right. Text in 710-710, the Coors Light text line. Cody Parkey was the Bears thought enough of him to give him, what was it?
$15 million over 4 years.
$9 million guaranteed. He might be on the outs in Chicago. Is he the answer here in Seattle if he becomes available? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right. The text toy has spoken. 710-710.
Yeah, and they all agree with me.
I don't know if all.
No, that's not true.
You probably got about, I would say I saw about five that I thought agreed with you out of about 40.
Just saying, what would hurt bringing him into training camp and throwing him out there during the preseason?
Well, just why him specifically?
That he would be the best you're going to get. Any kicker you're going to get is one of...
Is he the best kicker on the market?
Well, Robbie Gould is the guy I'd like to see him get.
Yeah.
Poach him from San Francisco once he becomes a free agent.
Look, I gave Blair Walsh a pass. We all did, because of the way he handled it. What I disagree with Cody Parkey, and everybody's like, hey, ease up, man. I'm like, I don't like the way he handled it. And his coach didn't either.
Which part?
The decision to go on that show and, you know, and the tone. And everything, and you know, and if they're like, "Hey, we're here to have fun," I'd be like, "Man, I'm sorry, I can't do that yet. It's too soon, and you know, we can do it a different way." Blair Walsh, you know, look, he stood there at his locker, and you know, was totally accountable and everything. And we talked to Blair Walsh. I thought he was great. What a nice guy. What a great guy. We talked to him, interviewed him when I was walking. When I did that year, I did the last four broadcasts. And we were in Jacksonville, and I walked past him. He says, hey, Dave, how you doing? I'm like, really? This dude remembered my name from an interview that we did with him, and he was a great guy. And I'm not saying Cody Parkey isn't a good guy. It's just that was a bad decision, and that was aggravating, I think, to his coach and probably to his teammates. So that's what they were talking about. I mean, I'm not going to sit there. I just think that was really poorly done.
I just completely disagree, but I guess we're going to...
Here's what I would say, because I think I fall more toward Jim, my initial reaction to it. Listening to you, though, Dave, I think I get why that has hit people who are either coaches or players much differently than someone like me. Because I look at it, and my initial reaction in hearing him was, well, he's trying to make the best of this, and he's part of his coping mechanism is to stand up and say, I'm okay. I'm not going to go bury my head in the sand, and I'm going to face this failure head on, and I'm going to meet it and try to overcome it, and this is not going to be what defines me. And they could, hey, maybe that message inspires someone. Maybe the act of standing up and talking about that helps him get through it.
Yeah.
Listening to you, though, and hearing how other people have reacted, I get that he's basically saying, here's how I'm handling this disappointment on this national TV program. And all his teammates are like, well, what about the disappointment I feel because you did that? You've put yourself out in front of the team. I can see that. I could see having that perspective. And
explain that to me then. How do you see him putting himself in front of the team when he apologized to his teammates for what happened in that national TV appearance? And he also did it after the game there at his locker.
And he's doing it at your locker after the game is part of being accountable. Reporters are allowed access to the locker room. There is an understanding, and this is part of the code of teams in a locker room, which is if you make a mistake, you should stand up to talk to people about it and not leave your teammates there to speak for you. This is something he's choosing to do this. He's choosing. The Today Show is calling him and asking. He's not obligated to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying from a teammate's perspective, I could say, like, why are you out in front speaking for all of us? We're dealing with the disappointment, too. But now it's the Cody Parkey redemption story that's here. What about all of us? I could see being a teammate because Dave's not alone. And I think that when you've heard other people talk about it, and I've heard other shows talk about it, people that have played and coaches, like obviously Matt Nagy, did not sit well with him what his kicker chose to do. Here's the Chicago coach on that.
We always talk about a we and not a me thing. And we always talk as a team. We win as a team. We lose as a team. And, you know, I didn't necessarily think that was too much of a we thing.
Where do you draw the line on a second chance for a kicker, though?
What do you mean?
Second sniff of milk, Jim.
You don't want to give Parkey a second chance.
The second time that you're like, well, is this any good? Here's what I'm going to say. You could. There's a lot of kickers you can sign, and he's the only one who will have missed 10 kicks in the NFL last year. You could sign anybody else, and they will not have missed 10 kicks in the NFL.
So he was dead last.
He missed the most kicks of any kicker. He basically missed the most of any guy who didn't get fired.
You give him a little bit of credit for hitting the upright so many times?
No, I don't. Right. That's worse.
Here's what bothers me about the way he handled it. When I coach, and I've told you guys this before, that I felt like a lot of the players, and I guess, you know, I'm an old man saying the younger generation, they used to, you've heard this, that's my bad. And I would always say to them, yes, I know that, you know, because what it was it's like a defense mechanism. Like, now you can't criticize me because I already admitted. And it's like this hurry up process. I'm like, no, you should feel bad. You should. That's what will discourage you from acting that way or doing that later on. And so if you fast forward through it, that's what I used to say to my kids, you know, don't fast forward through the bad time. You're meant to feel bad because it's a mistake that you don't want to repeat. So, and to me, that's where that came off to me, that it was just poor timing. Now, you could say, well, that's just your judgment. Yeah, that's right. But, you know, Matt Nagy felt that way. I know Moyer texted in. I mean, we've seen a lot of people that I liked the way Blair Walsh handled it. He did it. He screwed up really bad in a playoff game also. And that was an easy kick. His was a chip shot. But the way he handled it, I thought was way better. I don't like the way this guy handled that. And if that says anything about his decision-making or his state of mind, then I wouldn't want him.
You know what I like the most, though, about it? And I continue to disagree with Dave, but we just probably aren't going to agree on this one. He did not mention in that interview or after the game, you know, I think, didn't they come out and say that ball was tipped? I mean, he never really did say.
He does. He says it.
All right, okay, let me hear it again.
He says it.
Okay, go ahead, play it again.
He says, first of all, because this is another one, it felt good coming off my foot.
Yeah.
Do some of them feel bad coming off your foot?
It's, well, like, yeah, probably.
Are you sure? That seems weird.
I would assume
so.
Feel
bad coming off of your
foot.
Like
golf shots, some of them feel really good and some of them don't.
Yeah, but that's golf and there's more. Yeah. Anyway, he says after it, and he said, I didn't know it got tipped.
As a kicker, you know, you live for those moments. And I was, like you said, I was 3 for 3 before that. I had a lot of confidence going into that kick. So I went out there and my long snapper and holder did a great job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw the wind moving a little bit. I said, all right, this is where I'm going to play it. And obviously, I didn't know it was tipped or anything. I just went down and I thought I hit a pretty good kick, you know, felt good off my foot, and then looking up and then I saw it hit the upright and then hit the crossbar and I'm like, surely it'll go in. unfortunately bounced towards me, but obviously I'm disappointed. I let the fans, my teammates and the whole organization down, but I'll continue to keep my head held high because football is what I do. It's not who I am.
I let the fans, my teammates and the organization down. Well, what else do you want from him?
You know what I would say to him? Yes, I know.
Yes, I know it was your bad.
I know that. Yeah, it just I don't know. The timing to me is just way off for him. So,
so what would you do if he came to Seattle, Dave?
Well, you'd root for him, right? Everybody would hope that he does well.
I would ask him, why the hell did you go on that talk show? And what was with all the yucking it up after you said you missed? Surely it'll go in. Like, good night. Really?
It's Danny David Moore. We got the Professor John Clayton. He's coming up next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
It's time to find out what we've learned. It's brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess!
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Happy Monday.
To you as well.
Happy Monday.
Oh, I thank you. Well, we spent a lot of time today learning just exactly how Wyman feels about Cody Parkey.
Bar, and I'm like, surely it'll go in. unfortunately, bounced towards me, but obviously, I'm
what?
Disappointed. I let the fans, my teammates, and the whole organization down, but I'll continue to keep my head held high because football is what I do. It's not who I am.
I'm sorry. I'm with Matt Nagy on this one.
Why?
What? Let's sit around and joke around about it. Ha, 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 ha. Yeah,
no, he wasn't laughing, though.
He sounded kind of upbeat to me. I think he should pull a Luke Wilson and go into his basement and play video games and drink champagne for 2 weeks.
I want Cody Parkey here. I want him as the Seahawks' next kicker.
Because you want a loser.
That was a solid, solid Luke Wilson. For anybody who didn't listen, Luke talked to us after the Super Bowl loss against New England. He basically said I was in a really bad place and that he went into his basement, played video games, and drank champagne for a good, solid 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Some shooting game with aliens.
Right.
Was what he said. And he doesn't even like video games.
Yeah.
Well, and interesting that it was champagne because usually you're drinking champagne when you win.
I like to think that that's all he had around.
Yeah. Yeah, some old champagne. Yeah, doesn't everybody have like old bottles?
Or maybe
of that?
He had maybe some there for a victory party he had planned.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, that hurts.
I don't know, man. The way that sounded, and I'm getting lots of heat from people, but it's not like I don't give people second chances. I mean, but I just felt like the timing, I'm too soon. Too soon.
It comes off.
It's less than a week.
It comes off poorly. If you're a Chicago Bears fan and you hear that, I could see why you're really annoyed at it.
Or how about a teammate who maybe would have liked another playoff check?
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
He apologized to his teammates.
He did.
Yeah.
The 206 made the most sense. They said, to me, that sounded vindicated because the kick was blocked. Like a man that pled guilty to a crime he didn't commit, only to have be exonerated by evidence after the fact. He's still a bonehead, though, and he should get off Dave's lawn. Like, that made the most sense to me.
Have we advanced enough where somebody digitally, cyberspacely, could figure out where that ball would have gone had it not been grazed by the fingers of that Eagles defender?
I don't think we did. I have not seen that technology.
Why didn't he kick it higher?
Yeah, that's a question. Could have come out too low.
Good coming off his foot there on the... The day show there with all the laughing hyenas in the background.
Should I come up with should I try to concoct a scenario right now to see if Jim would be okay with this? We get fired. The entire show gets canceled because of my poor intros and outros. I know it's really hard for people to believe, but my inability to pronounce words, the fact that I can't say acumen I keep saying acumen. They call us upstairs and they say, we appreciate all you've done, but you guys are gone. And it's because of Danny. It's because of Danny. Mm-hmm. Because of nobody likes him, his witches cackle, everything's bad. I know this is far-fetched. And then, as we're all unemployed and kind of trudging around, of like, what are we going to do? And our health insurance is going to come out. And where do we get COBRA and all that stuff? They call me at King 5 and, hey, would you like to talk about this? Sure. Well, what do you feel about it? Well, you know, I feel that I let all my coworkers down, but my inability to pronounce words and be a good broadcaster, it's who I am, but it's not going to define me.
And then laugh afterwards. Yeah,
but I feel really bad for my co-hosts.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that. I'd be drinking so somewhere. Nice.
What if you were cheerful? He was cheerful and there was people laughing in the background.
Well, I think we need to get a video of the interview. And, you know, before we talk about it tomorrow, I think that's our homework assignment. We need to just Google that sucker.
Thoroughly view that.
Take a look at it.
It's a Cody Parkey video.
Jim makes. Yeah. Because sometimes video is different than audio. But
this will be CSI Parkey.
Oh. Yeah. Very funny.
Well, we also learned a comparison to the Today Show.
I have no understanding of the inner workings of that show at all.
I know Matt Lauer's not on it anymore.
That's true.
I do know that.
I saw a couple weeks ago where he poked his head up again. He's like, hey, can I work again yet? And everybody's like, no! Hey, no, you can't!
What if Matt Lauer came on there and went, yeah, you know, I had a sexual harassment thing going there, and, you know, it was just it was the wrong thing to do, and, you know, and then, oh, yeah.
Fake laughter is pretty funny.
That was a good parallel, I think. Right?
Yeah. Just tone deaf.
Yeah. Just
dude. How
about? Yeah. How about let it rest for a while?
Yeah. No, stay away.
Yeah. I didn't have any problem. I don't care about the Chicago Bears. I didn't care about the Minnesota Vikings when Blair Walsh missed it, but Blair Walsh handled it the right way.
The other part of it we didn't get into that maybe we can tomorrow is it's tough to kick at Soldier Field.
Oh God.
They call it the Windy City.
But it's his home field. Shouldn't he have it down? Shouldn't he have the advantage?
Yes.
It's tougher results-based business.
Tougher kicking off grass, too, than on turf.
Yeah. Somebody texted in, sorry, really quick, that I must be sick to my stomach having talked about a kicker all day. You usually get to like 10 minutes. It's like, all right, we're done.
we had about 40 minutes of kicker talk today.
Well, as long as he's an idiot. If we're all talking about what an idiot he is, we can go all day.
Kicker talk is 10 minutes. Idiot kicker talk, that goes on infinitely.
Finally today, we learned how Wyman deals with Cowboys fans.
I'm trying to decide whether I should tell this story or not.
Yes, you should.
Okay. We used to have call-in on the post game, and one time we played the Raiders, and there was a Cowboy fan that called in. I'm sorry, when we played the Cowboys, the Seahawks did, and a Cowboy fan called in, and he's described Moyer and I as if two men that sound like they've never pleased a woman before, is how he, and I said, that's not what your mom said. And I don't know if I was supposed to do that. Matt Stretch Johnson might have cut me off. And I know that's very immature, but so are the Cowboy fans.
That was so great, Dave. There's no way.
Was it?
Yes.
Aren't you supposed to play it a little more straight on the postgame show than you are here?
Yeah, it's a corporate, you know, thing.
That was so awesome.
Yeah.
It was great.
You don't remember the comeback from him, though, after that?
There comeback.
There was
You're
no
done.
Comeback.
You're done.
I think
it's a dial tone.
We might have gotten cut off.
Yeah. At that point, there's nothing that guy can say to salvage that. It's the kill shot. That's going to do it for us. Want to thank Jessica McIntyre for putting up with us. Curtis Rogers for keeping everything running on time. For all of you for listening through all of this for some unknown reason. Let's do it again tomorrow at 3 on Danny Davenport.